Future-proof gold from Newstalk.
A case was brought by a death row inmate against the state of Oklahoma, saying that midazolam, the drug that is now used to anesthetize prisoners before their execution, doesn't do the job it's supposed to do. And so its use violates the Eighth Amendment ban on cruel and unusual punishment. Professor of Anesthesiology David Lubarsky provided expert testimony for the case and joined us now to discuss. Hi, David. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Great, and thank you for having me.
What is in a lethal injection?
A lethal injection is basically unwanted euthanasia. So a convicted inmate is sentenced to death, and a variety of different drugs, usually used in a setting to produce anesthesia, are delivered in high doses with the thought that you are going to put a convicted inmate to sleep, paralyze them, and then often give them a third drug to stop the heart. So that's usually the sequence and the one that we were debating in front of the Supreme Court.
Could you go into a little bit of the three stages that you spoke about and the drugs used up until, say, 5 years ago? How was that process administered, and what changes happened to the body as these drugs were administered?
Right. So in the past, starting back in the 1970s, when the death penalty was reinstituted in the United States with the idea of using lethal injection, the drug thiopental was used in a large injection, single injection. And then it was followed by a paralyzing agent, a cousin of curare, if you will, in order to render the convicted inmate unable to move. And then a third, very caustic chemical, potassium chloride, was used to stop the heart.
What were the effects of sodium pentothal?
So sodium pentothal is a drug that we commonly use to induce anesthesia, or used to use in the olden days. We don't really use it at all anymore, to induce anesthesia. And it makes you makes your brain basically unaware and unconscious.
So this is presumably administered via injection in the same way that, you know, doctors used to ask you to count to 10 and you sort of get knocked out. That's sort of a general anesthetic.
Correct. That's exactly right. And that was how it was proposed by a pharmacist to the Oklahoma State Legislature, and then it was copied by a number of states. Almost all the states used exactly the same protocol, up until 2005, when colleagues and I decided to investigate what the drug levels in the dead inmates were following the three-drug cocktail that was being used. And what we found, and published subsequently in The Lancet, was that approximately half the convicted inmates did not have sufficient thiopental in their blood to really be fully asleep during the remainder of the process. And this actually started, this is already a decade now ago, started the discussion in the United States about whether indeed lethal injection was a humane way of killing someone. And the use of a paralytic as the second drug in the three-drug cocktail simply means that someone cannot express and cannot signal distress, pain, or awareness. And for that very reason, a paralytic is outlawed in animal euthanasia. That is, you can't use it to kill a lab rat because you might miss the fact that you have inadequate anesthesia on board before you give what is a very, very painful injection of potassium chloride.
So you're saying that the process that's happening at the moment, if the drugs are not administered in the correct doses, which you say half of the inmates on death row, that is the case, they are paralyzed so much that they could be screaming inside and nobody would know.
That is correct. And that is what we have seen in a number of botched executions where the paralytic didn't fully get into the bloodstream and the process was the and the discomfort and agony was clearly communicated. And that's the way it was, and this was being debated, and actually...
Sorry, I need to back up just a little bit, because,
sure.
You know, we're talking about someone losing their life at the mercy of the, or lack of mercy of a state. Presumably, there are doctors administering these drugs exactly to the specifications set out in a medical document that has been tried and tested.
No. And that is part of the critical flaw in the use of lethal injection as a humane process, which is physicians are not involved. And they're not involved because every organized medical society, from the American Medical Association to the American Society of Anesthesiologists, as well as others, have said that physicians cannot participate in the taking of another human being's life who is not requesting help with that. And so physicians do not participate in this. And
this is the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm?
Do no harm. That is correct. We're healers, not killers.
So doctors, because of the Hippocratic Oath, don't take part in this lethal injection. Who is killing these people?
Prison guards. And that's where it all goes wrong, because they are not equipped and not trained. And frankly, you know, I mean, they have a high school education, not college, medical school, and 4 to 5 years of anesthesia training to recognize when a human being is sufficiently anesthetized to tolerate a very painful intervention. I mean, that's what we spend all of our time doing when we're training anesthesiologists to be physicians, as making sure that patients are well taken care of, always asleep, and able to tolerate the surgery that's planned. A prison guard has none of that education. And so when things don't go perfectly according to plan, things don't go according to plan.
That must be, for people listening here in Ireland, where obviously the death penalty does not exist, and it doesn't exist in Europe as far as I know. There may be one or two exceptions, but the idea that an untrained person is performing these sort of injections is terrifying. So some of these things go wrong, time goes on, but for some reason this isn't addressed, that inmates have been killed in an apparently painful way. But something happens with the supplier of this drug, sodium pentothal, and it sort of disappears from use. Can you sort of track that history for us?
Sure. Actually, there's only one supplier of thiopental, and they were a European-based manufacturer, and from ethical reasons, they withdrew the drug from the American market, because the only groups really using it were correctional facilities for lethal injection. It really was not a drug that was commonly used for any other purpose. Following that, the states then went to a cousin drug of thiopental called pentobarbital. It, too, is manufactured in Europe, and for similar reasons, the distributor of that drug said you may not sell it to correctional facilities. And that drug became extremely difficult to find either for the purposes of lethal injection. And that occurred over the last year or two. And the third drug now, which is midazolam, because it's more widespread and in common use for as a mild sedative before surgeries, was seized on as, well, we'll just use that one because we can get our hands on it, basically.
Oh, my God. So the first choice was withdrawn because it was used for the death penalty. The second choice was withdrawn. So this is a third choice anesthetic for putting someone to death. You're listening to Future Proof on News Talk 106 to 108. We're speaking with Dr. David Lubarsky, who is a professor and chair at the Department of Anesthesiology at the University of Miami. And we're talking about the science, or lack of science, that appears to go into the execution of death row inmates. So talk to us then about midazolam, and you said a mild sedative before surgery. Is midazolam not the sort of horse tranquilizer that sodium pentothal was?
That's exactly correct. If you give people enough barbiturates, that's the class of drugs, you can put them into a coma. The drug is very powerful, and delivered correctly with, you know, which again is an issue with process, but if you were to deliver enough barbiturates correctly, you could eventually put someone into a coma and silence their brain entirely. Midazolam is not that strong. That's why it's used as a mild sedative usually. It is specifically noted that it is insufficient as a single drug to provide anesthesia for surgery because there is no pain relief associated with the use of this drug, and it cannot or does not routinely put a patient or convicted inmate into a coma. And so the level and depth of anesthesia that is provided by midazolam may be insufficient to cover the very severe consequences of the second and third drug, one of which is paralyzing someone who may not be totally asleep and therefore has air hunger and is screaming inside, as you mentioned. And the third drug, which is an extremely caustic chemical, which is injected in large doses, midazolam may not be sufficient to keep an inmate totally asleep during that process. And that was the context of the Supreme Court case where we discussed the science of the use of midazolam.
This sounds absolutely barbaric. I'm presuming by the evidence that previous cases seem to present that if someone was injected with this caustic drug that kills the inmate without paralytic drugs and without a sedative, it would be an extraordinarily horrific way to die.
Correct. That is the supposition. It's hard to know because since so many of them get the paralytic, well, all of the people who are getting the caustic drug to follow, they get the paralytic because they don't want a witness, frankly. They want it to look clean. They want it to seem peaceful when inside it may be not that way.
So why are they paralyzed then? Is it simply for to be look like a more peaceful death?
Yes, that's the only reason.
So essentially a cosmetic thing.
It is. And many, many, many people have believe that the three-drug cocktail is, frankly, inhumane. And why, as I've mentioned, in animal euthanasia, it is not part of euthanasia for animals. Because, as I've said, then you miss the fact that you may have an insufficient level of anesthesia. But even during animal euthanasia, the American Veterinary Association insists that when animal euthanasia is done, that someone experienced with the depth of anesthesia in that animal population be the one conducting the euthanasia so as not to accidentally make a mistake and accidentally torture an animal. And we do not provide the same safeguards, frankly, to convicted inmates.
So what you've said to me, it's beyond convincing, it's compelling, and yet the Supreme Court ruled against the inmates, saying that this drug that barely sedates them is suitable for Oklahoma to use as a death penalty drug. What was the evidence that you gave, and why do you feel that evidence did not convince the Supreme Court?
Right. Well, so a couple things. I just want to point out that it does, it's not just barely sedates them. It looks as if they're well sedated, but there's a limit to how well sedated you can be and how asleep you can be with midazolam. It's not just mildly; it is a deep sedation.
Okay.
But it may not be sufficient for the things that are coming after that. So what we discussed in the Supreme Court case, in an Oklahoma court as well, was the fact that the state says, well, we're giving a dose far in excess of what's needed. And the science is that there is a ceiling effect to the use of midazolam, which means after you give a certain amount, giving more does nothing else. And I like to kind of explain this when thinking about something like iced tea, where, you know, you put some sugar in and you can get it to dissolve, but after a while, if you keep dumping more sugar in, it just settles to the bottom of the glass and doesn't do anything, you know, further. That's sort of what happens when you give an excess dose of midazolam. It doesn't do anything further. And so that was the essence of the debate was, well, certainly, the drug must be enough because we're giving so much of it. But the science is that it doesn't matter how much you give because once you get to its maximum effect, which is not enough to do surgery with, it, no matter how much more you give, it doesn't matter. And the state found someone who is not a physician, who is a pharmacist, and who did not quote any scientific literature to back up their statements, frankly, that this was not a concern. And so it was really about me, my testimony, a quotation of a large number of scientific articles and textbook citations as to how midazolam functions. And for some reason, both the Oklahoma court and then the Supreme Court, in a vote of 5-4, decided that that was not compelling enough to stop the use of the drug.
How does that make you feel, David?
Sad. Sad because I'm a man of reason. I'm a scientist. I actually am not pro or con death penalty per se. That's a societal question, and which is not what we're debating. And you know, those are deeply held personal views that are not appropriate to the scientific discussion. The scientific discussion is clear that midazolam is not the right drug for this process. And the reasoning of the Supreme Court, which is, well, the death penalty is constitutional, and so therefore there has to be a constitutional way to apply lethal injection, is a flawed argument, but one which they held to, which is, well, you don't have a better choice, so we're going to keep going with this one. And I find that to be disturbing.
It sounds like the Supreme Court said, look, if we rule against Oklahoma State, we are essentially outlawing the death penalty, and I don't think they were ready to do that.
So, exactly correct.
So you're a professor of anesthesiology. So can I ask you a question? Presumably,
sure.
you're standing over people who are trying to develop really effective anesthetics, or at least people like you in universities across America are trying to figure out if there's a better way of removing the pain for somebody in the case of surgery or a trauma. Is that an unusual place to be? Because presumably, if you do come up with a great sedative, it could then be used to kill people.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Any anesthesiologist, really, it's not that hard. If we wanted to use our skills to dispatch human beings, we could do that. And I could do it pretty flawlessly, frankly. But I would never do that. And I would never, frankly, help the state become a killing machine, because that is against the Hippocratic Oath. And I think almost every single physician feels that way. And that's why our societies have been very clear about this. It's not only that we're not supposed to participate in the actual execution, but we have been prohibited appropriately from helping the state plan this, that is, to be an instrument of the taking of life. And which is different than, and I want to point this out, there are many physicians who actually believe that retribution is a reasonable exercise of justice in the United States for heinous crimes. That's just part of our culture, and they are entitled to believe that, but not entitled, I believe, to mix the practice of medicine with the practice of execution.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you one final question, and I suppose it's an ethical question at heart. The withdrawal of the medical community from this procedure is clearly leading to more painful deaths of some inmates. Would it not be better, when you're not beating the team, to join them in the best interests of the people who are being killed?
You know, so that's a great question, and there's never been actually a petition from a convicted inmate to have a physician do this well, just for what that's worth. And I don't know how the medical community would react to that. And it is troubling because you say, we could help you do this more humanely and avoid all these problems.
But Hank, you're saying an inmate has never requested that a doctor perform their execution?
Not to my knowledge.
But in that case, the Hippocratic Oath would not apply because someone has requested that help to die?
Well, that's a good question. That in and of itself is an ethical question. As you know, many physicians are against a physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia for any reason. Some endorse and embrace it. It's a hotly debated topic across the medical community. It's more accepted in Europe than it is in the United States. But that would be a different question, because then we'd be acting on behalf of someone who is asking for help, although we would still be carrying out a sentence and taking life that was not being freely given. And so it's a very tough place to be, and it's a tough place to stand by and watch people, frankly, mess up. But, you know, one of the and I know this is the end, but, you know, it really should be incumbent on the state to come up with a process that is both foolproof and humane. And because of either hubris or just simple lack of concern, they have not done that, despite decades now of muddling through this. And, you know, how we get to that endpoint where either it's humane or just simply eliminated, I think lethal injection is just, as it currently stands, not a good method for execution.
David, I'm on death row. I know that my execution is coming near, and I know what we've talked about here today. I ring you up and I say I want you to perform the execution rather than my jailer. What would you say?
Wow, that's a tough question. And I'm going to be honest with you, I would have to think about this very, very carefully, and I would seek counsel with people who are ethical experts and wiser than I am, because then all of a sudden it's a different question about what's the best thing for that human being who's seeking your help. And I don't know, and versus aiding and abetting what may be a wrongful process to start. And I think that's why the medical societies have drawn a pretty hard line, because it's such a slippery slope then.
Dr. David Lubarsky, professor and chair at the Department of Anesthesiology at the University of Miami. It was great speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. You have a nice day.